We don't have a quorum yet, but we'd like to welcome you, Commissioner Stigham, if you... Sure, yeah, yes, you can.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted you to chair today so we would have an impartial, polite chairman for Mr. Stigham. So.
Hopefully the commissioner will feel that way about it, too. How's the lutefisk down in East Kenya?
Did you miss it?
No.
I came out.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Thank you very much, and I think I'll begin by letting the members of your committee know that you appropriately and reasonably and rightly attended the Ludicrous Supper this fall.
I did.
And campaigned while you were in church.
Well, as there aren't many of my voters in the Kenyan area, I didn't have to campaign too much.
I was just...
I understand.
where there's two or three are gathered, you have to. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, thank you for having me here today to, I think, overview the departments a little bit.
Yes.
Overview both the mission, the personnel, the finance.
Commissioner, could you introduce yourself for the tape, please?
Oh, excuse me. Steve Swigham, Commissioner of Labor and Industry.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, besides the mission and the personnel, the funding of the departments, I certainly would want to focus in, if I could, on three specific issues that I think you might have some interest in, that being the new independent contractor law and licensure, which was passed in 2007, that being prevailing wage, enforcement investigation, and that being... the third one was workers' compensation potential reform. An effort that our department has been bringing forward, and we'll know in 2 weeks if we have a significant reform bill or not. So maybe I could focus in on those three policy issues towards the end. And we'll certainly take any comments, questions, directly that any might have.
Good.
I thought, Mr. Chairman, I would give you just a couple, three examples. Am I on tape? I didn't want to be on tape. a couple, three examples of the actions of our department, of your department, excuse me. It would be your department as we try to enforce the laws impartially around the state of Minnesota and the mission of our department. We've been up in Cohasset, Minnesota. There's a chairman by the name of Solberg someplace that represents there. It was someplace back there. And we were in Cohasset, as you know, Chairman, this fall, with our OSHA department, our OSHA consultation department. We were recognizing a company in Representative Solberg's district in Cohasset for their significant resources and success in workplace safety. We have enforced around the state of Minnesota penalties and laws for employers that hire persons 14 years of age in establishments that serve liquor. We've enforced laws that you have passed, Mr. Chairman and members, for child labor laws. That means penalties for businesses, businesses in specific, that hired children before 7 o'clock in the morning on school days, on school evenings. As you know, there's a law that says you cannot work before 7 o'clock in the morning if you have to be 14 or 15 years old on a school day. Mr. Chairman, I have seen dispute resolution proceedings from our department where we brought injured workers and businesses together in a non-confrontive way, a much more collaborative, working together way to try to prevent the expensive time delays in litigation, to get solutions and to get a settlement in workers' compensation cases. Mr. Chairman, I've also seen throughout the state of Minnesota when we've gone into various businesses and worked with them and making sure that their job place safety is what it ought to be to meet health and safety codes in the state. I guess, Mr. Chairman, what I want to do is just take 3-4 specific examples of what our department does do, or what your department does do, in making sure that the mission of job place, workplace, and your home safety, your health and safety in your home, your job and workplace, is of great importance to the state. If I could, Mr. Chairman, we probably have 5 different divisions that I would like to speak about. And I'll speak about them very quickly. I will let you know that our Workers' Compensation Division is a division that involves about $159 million of funding, $159 million of revenue. We have 90 employees in the Workers' Compensation Division that do everything from dispute resolution to intake officers. Mr. Chairman, the Workers' Compensation Division of the $159 million that I spoke about pays for the administrative costs of the department, but most importantly for supplementary benefits, for second injury fund benefits, benefits which are owed to injured workers in the state, previous to 1995, anyway, in those two areas. We pay for vocational rehabilitation. We have a number of state of the 90 employees that are voc rehab specialists. And, of course, we cover workplace benefits, workers' comp benefits for those businesses which do not have workers' compensation coverage for their uninsured. And they should not be, but if that happens, that somebody who is uninsured employer has an individual who doesn't, we do take care of that individual for workers' compensation and then make the assessments throughout the state appropriately. Mr. Chairman, next is our OSHA department. Our OSHA department is 99 employees, about $24 million. We have a very, very simple goal, and maybe I should have started with OSHA, because this simple goal that we have at the department is this, that every worker in the state of Minnesota goes home at night the same way they come to work in the morning. They go home with the same number of fingers, the same number of arms, the same number of toes, maybe a little more tired, and hopefully a few more dollars in their back pocket. But workplace safety is very, very important to us, and I probably should have started with our OSHA department. The OSHA department is split into, Mr. Chairman, 2 units. The compliance unit, which investigates and enforces and penalizes upon complaint or just upon going out to a business that we think is of a high priority for workplace safety and investigating. And then we also have a consultation unit, a unit which is about 22 persons, which is more education in nature and more out there as opposed to compliance. It more works with the job site, with the business, business and the labor representatives to make sure that job site be safe. Thirdly, Mr. Chairman, I go to the CCLD division, Construction Codes and Licensing Division. It's a division of 163 employees, about $65 million. That division, Mr. Chairman, and members licenses approximately 110,000 persons in the state of Minnesota. All persons who have professional licenses in the areas of high pressure piping, electrical, plumbing, and we license contractors. About 110,000 licenses we do issue, and of course we test and we enforce as well there and do investigations and inspections.
Excuse me just a second, Commissioner. I'd like to call the committee to order since we do have a quorum now. The committee is called to order. And I'd like to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
I'll move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Rupadina moves the minutes. Do you need to take a
vote? Yeah, take a vote.
Okay. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Okay. The minutes are approved. Okay. Did you have more you wanted to?
Maybe just a little bit
sure.
more. Just,
sure.
Mr. Chairman, the fourth unit that I mentioned, the first three OSHA, CCLD, and workers' compensation. The fourth unit would be our labor standards and apprenticeship unit. Labor standards and apprenticeship unit is approximately 19 employees there, 12 and a half in labor standards. They enforce the investigate the minimum wage child labor laws, the laws in the state involving prevailing wage. Mr. Chairman, this is the only unit of your department in Lake Mississippi which receives general fund money. We get about $1 million of my $981,000, I think it is, general fund money. The rest of the units that I've spoken about are all funded through workers' compensation assessments on employers in the state. We obtain federal funding, as in the case of OSHA, or run by fees, permit fees, license fees, as in the case of CCLD. So this is the only unit that directly will be addressing the significant budget deficit that the state faces of the $5 billion. We get $1 million approximately of general fund funding. A 12 and a half persons in the labor standards unit to enforce labor law in the state, and 6.5 persons to work with our apprenticeship program. And the apprenticeship program, Chairman, gets their money from workforce development. And then lastly, we have our general support division that supports all the other units. That would be our legal unit. That would be our unit for communications, our unit for research and statistics, our IT, our technology unit. Approximately 118 persons there. $23 million to support the other units, the other divisions within the department. Mr. Chairman, I think if I could, I would like to then go to the three issues which I mentioned that we would like to focus in on and to maybe make a report or look ahead into the future for this legislative session. Let me speak about the IC, Independent Contractor Program, first. The legislature, most of the folks sitting around this table in 2007, passed a law as a result of a legislative auditor study that said we had some misclassification of employees in the state. Employees were being not classified as employees, they were being classified as independent contractors until, of course, they maybe got hurt, they needed workers' comp, or they got laid off and needed unemployment comp, or they had difficulties, or they were not paying their taxes to the Department of Revenue. This legislature saw fit to pass at that time the law to license independent contractors. Actually, what they're doing is we're giving them, we're calling it an independent contractor license exemption certificate. So they would, all independent contractors, this is only for construction now, Mr. Chairman, will receive $450, and for the appropriate documentation to show that they truly are an independent contractor, will receive an independent contractor certificate. Mr. Chairman, I will report to you that at this time, the number of independent contractor certificates we have issued are far less than I or most members of this committee anticipate. We have, as of Tuesday of this week, issued 600 independent contractor exemptions. 600. Most of us thought it would be into the tens of thousands, maybe 20 or 30,000. But we've had about 1,000 applications only, and 600 have been issued. Now, it only became effective on January 1st, the law. So I'm sure there's still some knowledge that needs to be brought forward to individuals. There's maybe a number of other reasons why there's been so few, but it's far less than anticipated. We did take an internal office pool last fall to see, we guessed as to how many independent contractor certificate applications and permits would, or licenses would be offered. My guess was 17,800. So I'm only off by a little over 17,000. I will also tell you that within our pool, I was the lowest number of others in the pool. We had up to 30,000 as the guest of my deputy commissioner. But there are a number of reasons which maybe it's only approached 600. Secondly, workers' compensation, Mr. Chairman. Members, if we are capable and able to get a reform bill to be agreed to by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, that's by statute, six members of business, six members of labor set up that we work with within our department. They meet on January 28th. If they come to an agreement, which I believe at this time they will have a significant reform bill for you during this legislative session. I think it is appropriate we look at workers' compensation and we focus it to the two most important stakeholders. In workers' comp, we have tens and tens of stakeholders. The two most important are the injured worker and the business that pays premium. Now, there's a lot of other stakeholders, including my department, that serves the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. But we want to focus to those two most important stakeholders. We've had, Mr. Chairman, throughout the summer, four committees of various interest groups and stakeholders set up to help us with the reform proposal. All four committees have now made recommendations. They have found common ground. They've worked together very, very well. It will now be up to the WCAC to make the final recommendation to you, Mr. Chairman, on January 28th. And my hope is that that we will be able to come forward with significant reforms. Our system of workers' compensation, folks, is not in chaos today. We could be very, very shortly in chaos, but today we're okay. We're not in the same situation that California was 3 years ago, or Texas, or Hawaii. But you only need to know two graphs from our booklet to know that we might be looking for some problems in the future. One graph, Mr. Chairman, will show you, it's a good graph, by the way. It shows you the number of workplace injuries in the state is going down each and every year and going down significantly each and every year. So we have less workplace injuries. That's a good thing. On the other hand, we see the other graph, which is of concern, going this direction. That's the cost of the system, and the cost per case is going up, and going up rather significantly. If the two lines were going in somewhat parallel fashion, I probably wouldn't have any concern, nor should you, but they're kind of going divergent, and they're going in opposite directions, and I think that that is certainly cause for us to be aware that there is a problem there that, if not now, will develop within a short period of time. So hopefully we'll have a bill before you. And then the last issue, prevailing wage. I know Chairman Rukavina, with his interest, and as I spoke to him, has focused in on the issue of prevailing wage. In 2007, you as a legislature gave us three additional people within our labor standards unit to educate through outreach and to enforce and to investigate prevailing wage. We have done so. There have been significant numbers of investigations, a significant amount of outreach with education meetings all the way from our own education to our Department of Transportation to hearings that Rosalind Wade, the unit director, has had in Austin. I believe Representative Poppy, she was down in Austin last fall, maybe. Mm-hmm. The first one was in Austin. And in northern Minnesota, in western Minnesota, she has done a significant amount of outreach and education on the prevailing wage issue. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, let me just tell you that as commissioner, I've made sure that our department is impartial. Your department should enforce the law. Your department needs to be impartial in how we enforce the law. We will make sure, and we have made sure that this comment be clear to everybody, that we will not be used as a weapon, and we will not be used as a shield. We should not. There are interest groups, of course, that would want to use the department as a weapon, go out and get somebody else. And there are interests who would want to use the department as a shield and say, protect me. We will not be used as a weapon or a shield, Mr. Chairman, and I hope that the committee would appreciate that. So with that, a small overview, and I'm certainly willing to stand for any comments, any questions. Of the 490 folks, I have been so impressed with these people at the Department of Labor and Industry, Mr. Chairman. They really have the mission of the state at heart, of the mission of our department, and very, very performance-oriented. I want you all to know that. That the individuals working at your folks working at DLI are very performance result oriented, and I like that, and I think you should as well.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Rukavin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker, you look very relaxed, much more so than when you left this place a few years ago. I talked to former House member Representative Jaros the other day. President Reinert's predecessor, he told me he stopped taking his blood pressure pills, his blood pressure is down, he's sleeping better. So I guess, and you're looking great, please don't get my blood pressure in that up session, Speaker. But I do want to talk about your pool at the department. And by the way, I assume when you win, you will pay taxes on that. But let's talk about it, because I'm hearing some things, and I know you're trying your best to get your arms around it too, but there are some folks saying that because we didn't include corporations in there, was for individuals, that there's a bump in LCs, or limited liability of corporations being filed at the Secretary of State's office. So what do we do to ensure that these are legitimate corporations that just aren't being formed as shells to get around that law that we passed? And what kind of help or advice can I expect from you to try to get, if there are those that are trying to skirt that law, to get them to obey it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, after all those years, how come you still got dark hair and you turned mine gray?
It's turning gray. Believe me. You know, if you recall, I was at your height when I came here. The burden you put on me all those years. So. Well,
thank you, Mr. Rukavina. I didn't know if you were standing up now or not.
Top of the old joke.
How many times in the household have you heard that, Bo? Yeah? And Representative Reinhart, nice to meet you. I haven't had a chance personally, but you should know that we were in your district. I went in the department in your district this last fall, complimenting the Western Duluth Sanitary District. Is that the correct name?
Yep.
For their significant workplace safety improvements that they have had at the sanitary district. They have improved their, in fact, we gave them an award, a MnSTAR, MnSharp award, for their tremendous success and resources they put into workplace safety, and your district should be complimented for that. Representative Rukavina, first of all, the IC rule passed in 2007. We promulgated rules this last summer in 2008 to implement the law. We tried to make the rules as direct as necessary to receive the documentation we need to make sure we can make a judgment as to whether somebody's an independent contractor or not. There's a 9-factor test in the law, in statute. We need certain documentation, like 1099s and previous contracts that somebody might have had, to determine whether it'd be a true independent contractor or not. But at the same time, we tried to be as least intrusive as possible in people's lives and still get enough documentation to make the judgment. And I, from most folks that I've heard of, I think they would say that the rules that we promulgated were fairly reasonable. We started accepting applications on September 1st. That meant we tried to do a lot of outreach, sent 30,000 plus notices out to builders, contractors, associations, whatever it may be, that this law would become effective on January 1st, 2009. So it became effective about 2 weeks ago. 600 exemption certificates we've issued at this time, far less than anybody anticipated. Now, there could be a whole scope of reasons, Tom, as to why that is. First of all, let's assume that to some degree, the law might be working. In other words, if the law is working, that means that people will now be classified as employees, if truly employees, as opposed to being independent contractors. So let's assume in one case the law might be working and there might be more folks out there that will be working as employees rather than misclassified as ICs. I think that's, let's assume that the law might work. Secondly, we have seen an increase in LLCs at the Secretary of State's office in filings from last fall, a significant increase. We don't know if those are all contractors or not. The Secretary of State does not track it by occupation or profession. We push very hard. We've been trying to find out if they are, in fact, contractors or not. That is not, it is still a legitimate activity. It's not illegitimate. It's not illegal in any way, shape, or the form, but some folks may have moved from independent contractor to LLC. That is very, very possible. Thirdly, I think you all know, having been out in the campaign trail the last 6 months, as each of you have been, you know that construction and work is down, and down significantly. So are there people who may have left the field of contracting? Are there jobs that are not there right now, that they're not seeing the need to get their certificates and their licensure? I think the market would say that some of that is probably taking place. I think from an outreach standpoint, our department, you know, we have to get out to a lot of people and make people aware of this new law and this new rule, and very honestly, that's sometimes a tough thing to do, to find out individual X in community Y, to get them the appropriate information through whether the association. Most of these folks are not members of associations or groups, so it's tough to get them the appropriate information. We've tried very, very hard, but I think we need more outreach. The fifth reason might be, as you all know, 40 degrees below zero today, not a lot of construction going on. So I think we maybe need to get into the March, April, May time of the year to see the increase in construction, people finding out about the law, about the rule that they need this exemption certificate. I think normal activity in construction will build here in the next 3 or 4 months, and at that time, we will probably sit back as a department representative of Rukavina with interests and with legislators and try to make an assessment as to whether the law is working as it's supposed to. Factors in the market that made for less contractor certificates, or were there just some illegitimate ways that people got around the law? I think we do need some time to make that assessment.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a follow-up thing. Commissioner, you know, we compromised. I don't know if you actually were here then. I don't think you were. But maybe you had just been coming on, and Mr. Rakowski was here negotiating for the governor's office, and we compromised, and we tried to, because it's a problem for whether you're a Democrat or Republican. You mentioned early on in your presentation that workers' comp, we have to be concerned about the injured worker and the business person that pays those taxes, and these are the people that weren't paying anything, and when they, and there's an assessment on every one of our legitimate business people, and when these folks, if they try to cheat a little bit, fudge a little bit, they end up causing everybody's premiums to go up. And so I want, to work with you. I think we compromised on the corporate part of it, but if this proves to be a trend, I hope we can do something before March or April, because then we can't do anything at all until next year. So I hope we can accomplish that in this legislative session. That trend is showing that perhaps there is a little bit of fudging or misrepresentation going on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, certainly the numbers show that there's been an increase in LLCs. Again, that's not illegitimate.
No.
That's not necessarily illegal. But also, I think maybe as we sit back and we look at what took place, might we assume that the law might be working too? I mean, it is possible, likely, that the law is working and more people will now be classified as employees as opposed to misclassification as independent contractors. That is possible too.
Yeah, I have Representative Hawes, Eastland, and Mahoney with questions. Representative Hawes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, just on a really smaller scale, the cost of this certificate is $150. Did you get quite a few complaints on that?
Yes.
Yes, me too. And do you,
Mr. Hawes, Representative Hawes, yes.
Yes.
Can I turn them back to you? But wait, it is in statute. It's in statute, in law.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah. And now, do you think that is fair fee as it relates to your other fees and as it relates to how much it costs to actually process the certificate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawes, the numbers we had were this. The anticipated fiscal note was that the department would hire 14 people and have a budget from these fees on independent licenses of $2.5 million. But that was also based upon about 25,000 applications. As you know, with 600 applications, we brought in somewhere between $90,000 and $100,000, Representative Hawes. We can't run a department of a unit of 14 on $90,000. So we are going to have to make some very, very difficult decisions here as to the fiscal note and how it affects the number of persons that we've hired to implement the law. I don't think that we can increase that fee anymore. I would suggest to you not to do that. That means that we might have to make some adjustments with some personnel. our budget was supposed to be $2.5 billion. That's what the legislature passed. That's the anticipated fiscal note, and we have fallen far, far, far short of that.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, not to ruin my reputation, but I was thinking of actually reducing.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawes, to do that, we would need some financing from some other place other than the license fee itself. You know, it's figure $80,000 a person with benefits. You know, we're barely bringing in enough money right now to cover a person and a half, much less.
Mr. Chair, one follow up.
Go ahead.
Commissioner,
do you only have 600? 600 approved. We've had more applications.
Oh, okay.
600 approved.
But if this doesn't grow rapidly, wouldn't those be repeat applications? How long does the certificate last for?
Certificate is for 2 years.
Okay. But if Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Commissioner, if that's a repeat application, the process should be greatly reduced in order to do that. Couldn't that be handled within your staff?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawes, that is absolutely correct. The second time that a person applies, we should have the significant amount of documentation and information within our computer system that would make the reapplication a little easier than the initial one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Commissioner. Okay. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Swigum. As I recall, when we passed this, that if you hold a residential contractor's license or a remodeler's license, that if you're going to do any subcontracting for anybody, you have to have one of these as well. And I thought we created a lower fee that you could check a box when you're renewing your residential contractor's license, and then you paid a lower fee and you have this added on. Is that part of what we were doing here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastland, you are absolutely correct. We thought that for the residential contractors, and those who also need independent certificates, that would not be fair to charge them the full $150 and do double fees. So we, I think the charge was $200 if they applied for both licenses.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
And so how many of the 600 applications are people who already hold residential or remodeler builder's licenses now?
Let me ask my staff. you've asked me a question I can't answer right now. I apologize. I'm sorry. I will get back to you on that, but I don't know.
Okay, one more.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, how many residential contracting licenses do we have in our state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastland, I think the number approaches 15,000. We had some difficulty actually last year in the timing of the contractor licenses. We have improved our system significantly. There were some complaints that you might have received last spring from some contractors in relationship to either delay or, you know, I want to get in the ground, I want to build in, but the department hasn't gotten my license back to me. There was some delay in some cases, and I think we have cleaned that up for this next year. But about 15,000 would be the answer.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Are you anticipating any change in the number of residential contractors' licenses that are going to be renewed in the next year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Eastland, my expectation would be less. There will be probably far less. Personally, in my own life, as in most of your life, you probably know in contractors who have gone out of business or will not be, you know, put their license on ice for a couple of years till the market comes back. I suspect it'll be far less than 15,000.
Thank you. President Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Swigum, it is nice to see you here. And as my good friend, Representative Rukavina, says, you look the picture of health, so hopefully you're getting a little bit more sleep than you did when you were spending the evenings and nights with us. I'm just wondering if you've got anything you'd like to report on the code boards that we put together a year or two ago and how they're working and progressing their systems. I mean, one of the purposes of that, all those boards, was to get it out of here. And I, you know, one of the more memorable moments was when you and when Phil Krinke and I agreed, and you almost had a heart attack at the in the chair up there. I, you know, like to avoid those kind of moments again. So, if you've got anything that you'd like to share with the committee on how those boards are working out.
Mr. Chairman, members, Representative Mahoney is referring to the three authoritative boards that were created by this legislature. The authoritative boards for high pressure piping, for electrical, and for pump. The boards were given the authority and charged with licensure, enforcement, and in a couple of cases, development of code or approval of code. The boards have been meeting with very, very often, all three of the boards. They are all three very, very active. They have brought forward rules and promulgated rules. You know, there was the wisdom of the legislature to make them authoritative. Mr. Chairman, I have been put in different positions at different times of life, but going from an advocate to a regulator, and I have to make sure that hat change. I have enforced, impartially, I hope, laws that I may have voted against as a legislator. And some members here, including Mr. Mahoney, knows of some of those situations already, and have hopefully done so with justice and as the black and the white of the law reads. I was not a supporter of the authoritative boards, as Representative Mahoney knows, but they are there, they're working diligently, and they certainly are meeting the best interests, I think, of their respective professions.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. Thank you. I know that when you go from an advocate to a regulator, it's difficult, but I'm glad to hear that those boards seem to be working out. Could you comment at all on the Walmart settlement? I read a paragraph in the paper this morning, and I apologize for coming a little late if you did go over that. But
okay. I did not, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I did not. The Walmart settlement was a settlement that, first of all, particular note to each and every one of you is that there will be a $14 million check issued from Walmart in a civil penalty to the state of Minnesota. We have had from the judge and district judge in Dakota County, I think Judge King, preliminarily has approved the settlement. Part of that settlement was $14 million civil penalty to the state because of not only our state statute, but there was a case that was approved by the Supreme Court, ruled on by the Supreme Court last May, called the Milner case. And in the Milner case, the Supreme Court ruled that civil penalties that would be awarded would go to the state of Minnesota. So I guess, members, what I should be doing is sitting here and saying that if I signed and approved this $14 million for the state, take that into consideration when you look at my budget. Do you like the PLI, Representative
Mr. Chair, I would like him.
You would like him.
For the division.
Let me comment on it just a little bit further. This case was brought forward in a private action. Walmart, it was found by Judge King in Dakota County, had in a couple of million different cases, situations, avoided or misinterpreted or did not apply the law as such. It included things like requiring training for workers off the clock. It included things like shortened or maybe even denied breaks, rest breaks and lunch breaks. In total, Judge King said there were a couple of million of violations. Again, private action brought forward. Complaints could have been brought to the department and we would investigate it, but these were private actions, a private settlement, and part of the settlement Well, I think the total settlement was $56 million, if my memory serves me correctly, 14 civil penalties to the state. So it's going to help your budget just a little bit.
Representative Mahoney, you have a follow-up?
It's not a follow-up to that. It's on a going back to Representative Rukavina's concerns about the IC. I don't want to offend any lawyer in the room, but I probably will. I suspect that the bump in the LLCs down in the Secretary of State's office is connected to the IC law, and I am concerned that we have some action that remedies that this year. So I would ask that you not today, but come back at some time in the next month or so. I don't know what time the deadlines are going to be. We'd like to, if we can, address that this year with some solutions that you might see might be workable. And you can do it by a written letter or stop back to the committee. You're always welcome here, I'm sure.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, just for your knowledge, because this is a concern, what the consequences are and actions may or may not be, and let me first assume the law is working. I want to make that assumption first. But if there is actions which are taken that are trying to avoid the letter of the law, we have already convened a group which we would like to expand to include you. Actually, it was convened by Senator Bach. Senator Bach had a meeting in his office this week with certain interests, with some special interests, myself. I'm trying to think of who else was it, John. Who else? Who? Department of Revenue was present as well, where we were talking about potentially actions that would be necessary if the law is not being followed or trying to be avoided. We did not come to any agreement yet as to what those actions should be, because there weren't a lot of good choices. There weren't a lot of good actions to take without having severe consequences from other places. If you would speak to Senator Bach, I know that he's extremely, extremely interested in this bill and what the action is.
Thank you.
And I will come back. Your second question, I will come back with directions.
Representative Clark.
If you would take
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Sigham, I just wanted to ask you a question. A couple of years ago, I guess, actually, January of this 2008, we got a report. I was working on legislation with the department, I think while you were still here, dealing with the handling whistleblower complaints and some issues that had come up.
Excuse me, Representative.
The issues around whistleblower complaints, people providing, blowing the whistle on something that was happening and then not finding a process that worked for them. And we had some communication, I think you had just come on in the department. I'm just wondering if you can update me. I'm just looking at the report that we got back in January of 2008. One of the things is that there would be a disposition made for an investigative report. And I'm just wondering if you can update me on how that's working, and have you had whistleblower complaints that have gone through the full process now that it's been tweaked a bit, and are there still issues to be dealt with or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there have been no issues that have come to my focus as commissioner or my awareness. And I would have to speak to some other supervisors within our units to respond in a way that
okay.
To do so with appropriate.
Okay, that'd be fine. If we could just have another conversation.
Okay, John.
Thank you.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I just wanted to clarify, I'm not sure I understood correctly, earlier when you were talking about the independent contractors and Representative Haas was asking you some questions, and you talked about the budgetary issues in anticipation of a high incidence of application that 14 employees, you talked about these, were they all hired and what are they doing if you hired them, or were you expecting to hire them and you have not hired that many? So I was unclear. Clarify for me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, the fiscal note called for 14 FTEs. The anticipation was revenues that would be coming in via the fees of approximately $2.5 million. As you know, again, we put the numbers together, we're far short of that. The department hired 10 persons to begin, so we did not hire all 14. That helps us a little bit as we deal with our personnel. We hired 10. I think 6 of those 10 were investigators or determined to be the job description of investigators. Then we had a couple of clerical. It was 10 persons anyway that we did hire. We are at this time still taking a significant number of calls. So, you know, when I mentioned Representative Norton, 600 licenses have been issued. There have been significant number, a greater number of calls. Calls of, you know, what is this law about? Our folks who work in that department have to have a great deal of patience and understanding, because you imagine some of these people are not real happy when they call. You may have received some of the emails from the individuals, so if you understand there's some emotion that's involved there. We are also making sure that those persons are being cross-trained and helping out other divisions. Other divisions, so that there will be some that are helping out within the workers' compensation division. One of the persons actually that is hired will be helping out as his part-time legislative liaison, helping out Mr. Rakowski on a part-time basis. And we're trying to make sure that they are keeping very active. But they were cross-checking, cross-training to other departments. We wouldn't be able to justify right now 10 people for 600 applications. I understand that. If all of your eyebrows didn't raise when I gave you those numbers, I'd be surprised. But.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you know, also in the 2007 session, we worked long and hard on the prevailing wage enforcement issue, as you said, and for the new members, you know, depending on where you lived in Minnesota, either it was enforced or it wasn't enforced, really. So we gave you some money, and my understanding, Commissioner, is you're doing a good job. I saw there was a settlement. Were a couple of different, I believe, where back pay was required. There were also fines in that legislation that we kind of worked on with Mr. Rakowski again and with Ms. Wade, and I'm wondering if they have, if there's been, what kind of money have you recovered for employees? I saw that suit where the four employees sued and the department got them their prevailing wage back. So how many times does that happen? What kind of prevailing wage dollars have you gotten for workers, and what kind of fines have been levied?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukamina, at this time we've approximately recovered $62,000 for workers in the state that were not paid the correct wage at that time of work. So we recovered that $62,000 from the employer, and that has been, those monies have been passed on to the employee. The best part of this is the attention it brings to the fact that the prevailing wage is part of the law, and in certain cases, certainly all state projects, you know, has to be paid. You're trying to bring that at that attention. Mr. Rubina, at this time there are currently 34 cases though, 34 that are still open and that are being investigated, will be enforced, but as you would guess, Representative Rubina, the investigation doesn't happen in a day. There's a lot of information and documentation that needs to be requested from the employer. So we do have 34 cases open. We did hire those three persons you gave us in September of 2007. So they all three are on staff. All three are performing their job, their work. I can tell you at this time that they have recovered $62,000, but made the intention in probably much greater effect than the $62,000 they recovered.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, have there been like multiple cases where of those 30 some that are pending and the few that are settled where the employer had where there's an employer that's involved in more than one case?
Mr. Chairman, there are employers have been involved, the same employer has been involved in more than one case, considering the 34 that are open. The law also states, as you know, that if there's willful and repeated violation, willful and repeated, there will be a penalty that will be assessed as well. And our department at this time, from labor standards, has not determined willful and repeated taking place as of after July 1st of 2007. But with the open cases there, there are some repeats. Yes. Now, what we find out in the investigation, Representative Rufino, I can't prejudge that.
And finally, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I don't know if I misunderstood you on total numbers of employees. I thought I heard you say 400 some.
About 490.
490.
Yes.
And with your little sheet here, I added up and maybe I'm not the best mathematician, but I only came up to 372 or so, but I could have added wrong too. But where are the rest of them? Or is my addition wrong?
They should be in this form, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina. We have 90.6 employees in workers' compensation.
Mm-hmm.
We have 99 employees in OSHA.
In OSHA, okay. I got 82.6 here.
Oh, and then the 16.9.
And the 16.9, I've got those.
We have 163 in CCLD.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the licenses.
I got those.
We have a 19 in the labor standards unit of Rosalind Wade that she leads.
I'm going to miss those somewhere.
And then we have 118 in our general support services. Oh. That would be IT. That would be.
I didn't see that one, so that's where the rest of them are. I didn't notice that in here, so it's not in your book. So those 119. So I.
It's not in the book.
Right.
Mr. Rakowski tells me that was not included in the book. The general support services were not. That's, Mr. Rukavina, that's the communications. That's the legal staff. That's the IT staff. That's the research staff. That's IT. That's Rocco's position.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair, Commissioner, your total budget is approximately with all of your income, whether it's federal, state, fees, whatever.
I think it's about 250, Mr. Chairman.
And how much, so what percentage does workers' comp fees and that pay for the department's total budget?
Mr. Chairman, I will need to, I don't have that direct answer. I would have to do some calculation. I could do it.
As an example, Commissioner, the 82 employees in OSHA, and that has a $16.2 million budget. Is that workers' comp money, or is that some federal money that comes in? Or
The OSHA money, Mr. Chairman, would be 50-50. Usually they are $50-$50, 50% from the federal government, and then we have to match that. But, of course, we do a little better than that from the state. We do make some assessment for positions in consultation. Assessment to workers' comp premium for some positions in consultation, not in compliance, but in consultation. And I also believe that in 2007, this legislature saw fit to give some additional positions in consultation that ended up not obtaining the federal match.
But I guess, members, and I know, Commissioner, you met with me, you came up to the Iron Range. I even gave you a ride and kept the car on the road from Hibbing or Chisholm to Virginia, and we had a discussion on your initiatives, which I think you have some initiatives too for your on workers' comp. And I know that you've talked about the cost of the system and everything else, but my understanding is that there's a lot of funding programs at the agency that are paid for by workers' comp assessments. So if you can get me that, there's other things being paid for by worker comp assessments too that maybe and I know, members, that certainly work safety and OSHA enforcement and that saves injuries too and can be tied to that someone. But part of that system, as you talked about rising costs, is the fact that we've gotten away from general fund dollars to fund our state agencies and relied on other assessments, and this could be one of them that we look at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rugavina, out of the $159 million that I did mention in workers' compensation, $142.8 million are for benefits. And that's sub benefits, that's second injury fund benefits, that's uninsured employer benefits for workers who work for employers who didn't have insurance. And basically those 3 years. So 142 out of the 159 actually go for benefits. And then Volk Rehab, our vocation rehab, gets about $5 million in addition to that. So that brings 142.8 up to 147.8. And the rest is probably for the benefit management and resolution of the department.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, we do have a bill to look at, but I want to thank you, Commissioner, for coming before us. And as was said, you're always welcome back here, and look forward to the next Lutefisk dinner in Kenya.
And members, thank you for your kindness always, and we will be getting back at least to, I think, three follow-up questions that I'm aware of to the members.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Lutefisk, second Wednesday, October.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Got it.
You say it with such enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, members, you need to know, I watched. He did eat it.
Oh.
He did eat it.
Oh, with great gusto, yes. Representative Mahoney, would you like to come forward? I believe you all have in your packets House File Number 4, and this bill is recommended to be passed without amendment. I'll move the bill to recommended to pass and without amendment. Representative Mahoney, present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 4 be passed to the floor. No.
Recommended to go
Chair,
to finance?
I think it has to go to finance.
To finance.
Yes.
Members, in the Bioscience and Workforce Committee, day before yesterday, we had information from Steve Hines with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, citing 200,000 people on unemployment, and it's likely to be 260,000 by the end of this year. Our state is in employees of the state are in trouble, and we need to make sure that those members, those unemployed people, get all the benefits we possibly can get for them, because it may be a statistic to us, but to a family that's on unemployment, an unemployment check is the answer to a bit of a crisis. Might even be a lifeline, as we call them. Anyway, House File 4, in Section 1, at present time, we have a base period on unemployment, and it is the last four of the last five quarters. It is, I have to make sure I get this right, last four completed quarters of the last five quarters are your base period. This bill creates a second or either or base period of the current base period or the last four last four quarters for your base period, which what that does is it creates the ability to get more people onto the federal extension. Because of that, we will hopefully, the best estimates the department can give us is that we will serve 12,000 more people with unemployment benefits paid for by the federal government and great deal by the federal government. That's what this bill does. Some of the questions that I have been asked is, will this affect an employer's insurance rate? No, it will not. It's actually in the bill, but the simplest way to explain it is that those rates are set by law. They are at their maximum this year, next year, and for the foreseeable future, so there will not be any change in that whatsoever. Will this affect the trust fund? Yes. The trust fund is going to go into deficit. not a question. We're going to pay out $1.3 billion in benefits, and we will be in deficit the last week of December of 2009. This bill, to help 12,000 people, will cause the trust fund to go into deficit 72 hours earlier to help 12,000 people. I think that's a reasonable price to pay, and we will pay that off as we always have in the past. This is not the first time the trust fund has gone into deficit, I doubt, seriously, and it will be the last, either. Mr. Chair, members, I ask for your support in this bill to get it to finance and get it to the House floor and start helping people as soon as we can. I'll stand for questions.
Okay. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Chair Blythe. Representative, could you just hit that last point again? As a new member, take 30 seconds and walk me through that we have been in deficit before and how we've recovered from that with the fund.
The trust fund will go into deficit the last week of December 2009. And it is, as I said, it is not the first time, nor will it likely be the last time. What happens is we borrow from the federal trust fund, and we pay that back over time. And I believe the rate is 4.5%, I believe, or less.
Representative Gardner, down there.
Mr. Chairman, I asked that question to Mr. Nelson, and it will likely, with the interest rate being less today than it was when we borrowed it the last time, it will likely be less interest paid, and the rate will be lower than it was at the 4.8% level.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Representative.
So, yes, we will pay that back, and it will be paid back out of the unemployment insurance that's collected on the on every employee in the state 4 years to come or until it's paid off.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? That moves us down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. You mentioned that the trust fund will go into deficit. Is that based on committed payments, or is that based on kind of projections of economic activity or lack thereof?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is the department's best estimates, and I believe it is based on the projection of 200,000 in unemployment now and another 70-some thousand between now and the end of the year. So it is a projection, but the department's best estimate that they can give us.
Mr. Chair, may I continue?
Yes, I'm going to ask Mr. Nelson to come forward in case there are other questions that he could answer. But go ahead.
And so just to clarify, what we would really do by virtue of extending these benefits is perhaps push the trust fund into deficit some minor period of time earlier than it might have been given the additional population of people receiving benefits. Is that a fair way to characterize it?
Correct. We will probably push this into deficit. The estimates is approximately 72 hours, 3 days earlier.
Okay. And then final question, if I might, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The date of June 30th, 2010 for the expiration, were there other dates considered? Was a 3 month or a 9 month extension considered? And maybe what would be the rationale of the 6 month extension?
That's the first time that question's come up, so I'll turn that one over to Mr. Nelson.
Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dunning, I wrote that date from June 30, 2010. Currently, the federal extension is set to expire on August of this year. In conversations with the United States Department of Labor, they expect Congress to extend that extension out, not necessarily for individuals, but extend when the program expires to the end of 2010, but they are not sure. I understand President-elect Obama's stimulus plan was just issued today, and that may contain, it talks about an extension out there, and I don't know what that date is. The thought was that Congress will extend that date, but this gives the legislature time to see what it does and fix it next session if we whatever this body. But if that federal extension expires under this bill, the state extension will immediately expire. It just covers and mirrors the federal extension for those people who don't qualify for the federal extension, which is about 10% of every individual who exhausts regular state benefits does not qualify for this federal extension, and this just backfills for those individuals. This same thing occurred. The legislature passed it in 2002, the last time there was a federal extension. But that June 30th day was just picked so that next session this body could consider anew whether, given the state of the economy at that time, what you wish to do. But it gave time to make adjustments to this program if you so chose next year. That's for the date. No other magic to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at this and I'm just trying to figure out and put some scenarios together of how people are not currently qualifying under the federal qualifications and how they would qualify under the state qualifications. So can you describe some real-life instances of who this will help? Because it looks as though like we're just shifting essentially the eligibility back or forth 3 months. A calendar quarter. So could you please explain, in real life terms what this means?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, I'll use the example. Let's say that an individual started employment on June 1st of this year and got laid off today. Under the current base period, that snapshot in time we look at, that individual's base period would be October 1st, 2007, to September 30th, 2008. So we wouldn't count the last quarter of work. And that individual would have a state weekly benefit amount of $350 and base period wages of $12,000. This is where it gets complicated. The federal law requires you have base period wages of 40 times your state weekly benefit amount. That person wouldn't qualify. They don't have 40 times their 350. If the base period were the last four completed quarters, that individual would have that same $350 weekly benefit amount, but would in fact qualify because they would then have $15,000 of wages in their base period and would in fact qualify for the federal extension. Just by moving that base period. That's probably the easiest example I can give you. But there are literally thousands of people who would qualify by moving that extension, by moving that base period.
Okay. Representative Corbina.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, thanks for asking because that shows, a good example of the state being able to have some leeway in accessing federal dollars for our folks that they wouldn't. But maybe you can tell us, to your best knowledge, Mr. Nelson, this law, and I know you've talked numbers, you're estimating maybe 2,700 people or whatever it is. What is it? Will they then qualify those 2,700 people for both the 33-week and the 13-week possibly extension? And what kind of, do you have an estimate for the committee about what kind of federal dollars we're talking about bringing to Minnesota that if we didn't do this, we wouldn't bring it off for our constituents?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, we know the number of people who did not qualify for the federal extension. That currently is running about 14,000 who, absent this little provision in federal law, would have qualified, this special earnings requirement, 14,000 people. We estimate that about 3,000 will, upon passage, immediately qualify for the state extension. Now, we come up with that number because when the federal extension was put in place in July, we sent out over 40,000 letters to people who could theoretically qualify. and we had about 1 in 5, about 8,000 or 9,000, who actually applied immediately. So that's where we come up with that 3,000 estimate. We don't know, you know, out of this 13,000 letters we'll send, how many will qualify. It could be more than 3,000. It could be less.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, do they qualify then when we, with this state law change, for they'll access after they use our state fund the 33 weeks and then the 13 weeks both?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rufavina, no. The change in the base period will only affect those new exhaustees, which are coming online, which is right now about 150 a week and may be increasing dramatically. So it won't affect that past group. It will affect new people,
right,
who exhaust in the future. Our estimates are it will bring in about $500,000 a month as soon as that base period has the effect, about $500,000 additional federal dollars.
Okay, seeing no other questions, I would renew my motion that House File 4 be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chairman Member.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor of adjourning, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Committee stands adjourned.